You are about to witness history in the making. Despite the world's highest living standards, the average American remained vaguely discontent, aware that his goal of a better way of life had still not been fully realized. There was something missing.
There's this awful gap in our lives just because we don't have... Oh, but why talk about it?
It's just that... Oh, I keep hoping someone can find a way to...
Don't be a fool, Mary. You know that's impossible.
Oh, I know. It's just that...
Gad, it's ironic. With all our technology and industrial know-how, we still don't have the one thing that could give us a better way of life.
It's the Forgotten Filmcast.
Some people call this a war. War or not, one thing is sure. A daily battle is being waged in supermarkets all over this country. A battle for the customer's dollar.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 179 of the Forgotten Filmcast. My name is Todd Liebenow. Thanks for joining me for this look at the movies that time forgot. On this episode, I'll be joined by Tom Panarese from Pop Culture Affidavit to discuss a 1988 film about a bunch of military brats who set out to rescue their fathers from captivity in North Korea. Starring Kevin Dillon, Christine Harnos, Ned Vaughn, and Mark Price, directed by Ferdinand Fairfax, it's The Rescue. But first...
Why do I have so many friends? Well, I like...
The Forgotten Filmcast.
Jim Rex? What's Jim Rex? Would you believe a movie audience guide presented as a public service by this theater's management to help you select your motion picture entertainment? Well, that's what it is. And we urge you to learn these rating symbols and use them as a guide for you and your family. G means suggested for general audiences, all ages. M, suggested for mature audiences, parental discretion advised. R, restricted, persons under 16 not admitted unless accompanied by parent or adult guardian. X, persons under 16 will not be admitted. This seal in advertising indicates that the film was approved under the Motion Picture Code of Self-Regulation.
Hi, I'm Chili Dilly, the personality pickle. Packed in a jar for the freshest flavor. Served cold in a sack for you to savor. So dainty to eat, no muss, no fuss. An ideal snack for all of us. Crisp, tender, and tasty with a bit of spice. Buy one now. Taste how nice. Snack bar clerks will knock themselves silly, speeding your order for a real Chili Dilly.
Drive away your worries and cares at this drive-in theater, where you will see the finest motion pictures of all time soon to be released. Drama, comedy, adventure, excitement, something for everyone. Here's a brief glimpse of some of the truly fine pictures we've scheduled in the near future.
We saw this with our own eyes, an object the like of which we had never seen before. A frightening, strange shape descending from outer space with relentless purpose. Where did it come from? And what did it want of us?
Hello, hello, hello. It's an aircraft, all right, but like nothing I've ever seen before. Hello.
What do you mean?
Hello, hello. It's like something from another planet.
Thank you.
Do not try to follow me. You cannot get help. Around this house, I've drawn an invisible wall through which no one may pass.
Here is a news reporter with a world-shattering story. A girl trying to escape from her past. The scientist trapped in spite of his knowledge. And here also is the barmaid, hiding a murderous secret. A murderer with a life already forfeit. And introducing the devil girl from Mars herself.
Get back or I'll fire.
You fool.
Get back! Shoot, man, shoot!
Robot device has been rocketed from Earth to Mars with unimaginable results as Martians assume Earthmen identities.
Is that what you plan on doing? Removing and replacing me?
Well, as you see, Doctor, you've already been replaced.
The day Mars invaded Earth.
What happened?
David.
Oh, honey, what happened?
Somebody followed me.
Starring Kent Taylor, space scientist, whose experiment backfired. Marie Windsor, the wife. Will she too be removed and replaced?
What is it?
It's unearthly.
William Mims, marked for Martian vengeance. Terrifying, nightmarish, but too terribly, hair-raisingly real.
Why have you brought them here? You can't harm me, Dr. Fielding. I don't believe you. You have the weapon. You may use it.
No! No!
And now, on with the show.
Okay, that's it. We're just going to make it.
How much do we have?
$2,076.02.
What's he doing here?
His friend.
Tell him I made the tape.
You made the tape.
Sean and I want to go to Washington and talk to some people. We scraped up enough money from our savings, Max included. If you want to put in, well, you're welcome to come.
And talk to who?
Anybody who'll listen.
You're wasting your time.
Look, if you came here just to blow us out of the water, there you go.
You don't think the president would see them? He gets off on that kind of stuff.
Yeah, sure, he'd see him.
Yeah.
He'd pat you on your head and tell you how brave you are. Break the hearts of America and send you back home.
We can't just let them die in there.
He's not going to listen to you. You're not going to change anybody's minds.
He's got a point.
See this? You know what this is?
Yeah, what about it?
It's the SEAL's crest.
I know what it is.
It says we take care of our own.
So what?
We can't just sit back and be one of the numbers. Look, maybe they've written my father off, but I haven't.
Where are you heading?
North Korea. Operation Phoenix.
Wait, you mean we go get them?
Yeah. Why not?
It's all their force. The plans, the agents, everything.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I love it.
How do we get the plans? No. My father will buy an electric chair, and my mother will pull the switch.
Okay, our movie this time is The Rescue from 1988. And joining me to discuss this film is Tom Panarese from Pop Culture Affidavit. Tom, welcome back to the show.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm great. It's been too long since you've been on the show, so it's great to have you back. Why don't you tell all our folks who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so I have a podcast called Pop Culture Affidavit. I just say it's everything random in popular culture. I just choose something, whether it's movies, music, comic books, television or something, and just about once a month talk about it. So my past topics have included a number of movies, from John Hughes films to a movie you did recently, Megaforce.
Yes.
That movie, man. I've done a whole string of episodes on like syndicated television. I recently did a look back at 20 years ago with the controversy surrounding the Chicks and their comments about President Bush back in 2003. I've talked about the Cold War. I've talked about, you know, the Teen Titans and stuff. So that's basically what I do over there. And I think the last time you and I were on was The Legend of Billie Jean, I think. But it might have been something later than that. But yeah. So, but 80s, 90s movies are kind of my playground with a lot of things. So.
Well, and I got to admit, it's at times it makes me a little jealous that you gave yourself an open format where you can basically do whatever, comes to mind, because we've got a focus here, forgotten films. But sometimes, you know, there's a part of me that goes, it'd be fun to talk about an old TV show that I really love or something else. So, you know, it's good that you have some variety going there.
It is nice. It keeps me from getting too bored or tired with it, because one of my old shows that is ending, I did a comic book from beginning to end, and that's one of those where you know what's coming up next. And 10 episodes in, it's great, but like you hit about 50 or 60 in and you're like, this is starting to wear on me.
Sometimes there's a reason those series come to an end, isn't
yeah,
there?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I mean, it's fun to go back and look at those in order. I mean, I've never been as big a comic guy. I know that you're a much bigger comic guy than I ever was. But like, I can remember going back many years now. I mean, we're probably talking 15 years ago now, because my son is 20, going on 21 now. Mm-hmm. But back when he was really young, we signed up for the Marvel digital service that they have, and we read through the original run of Fantastic Four, going beginning, there and just doing it together as kind of like a bedtime thing. Mm-hmm. He'll probably always, remember the odd voices that I used to do, my thing is classic, but but no, I mean, it's fun to look at that stuff and go through it in order. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, one thing though, I have seen on your site here recently that is intriguing to me. Well, I mean, a couple of things I've noticed recently that kind of caught my eye. You mentioned you do lots of different things. One thing that really just struck me in the right spot was I saw you did a write-up about the wiffle ball.
Yes.
And that whole concept, which, here we're entering into the springtime and it's baseball season and all that kind of stuff. And I mean, I have great memories of playing, our own adapted version of baseball in the cul-de-sac at the end of my street, and trying to use equipment that wasn't going to like damage things if we hit the ball too far and things like that. So that article definitely was, I could relate to that.
Oh, cool. I appreciate that. Yeah, I haven't played wiffle ball in years, right?
It's just one of those things. It's always there. You go to Kmart and there's the wiffle ball display.
Yeah. Exactly.
The other thing that it really, I thought, well, this sounds like it's either a great idea or something that would just be frustrating. And that is this thing that you have where you've been doing the uncollecting. Tell us about the uncollecting, because I don't know that I'd have the strength.
So this is it's a side project. I don't even know if that's the right word, but it's another blog I have, theuncollecting.com. So a few years ago, I realized that between comic books, movies, and just books, and I think podcasts, I owned a lot of stuff that I hadn't read or watched. and it was just taking up space. So I decided to just write about this, and you know, a combination of a couple of things, one of which being that I would, you know, where I would review quite a bit of what I was reading or listening to or watching, and then kind of make a decision of whether or not I was going to keep it or sell it or just throw it away. And so it's been, I think I've been doing this for about like 3 or 4 years now. So sporadically I will review usually a lot of the comic books. And then every month I kind of update of like, I've been keeping track of like how much I've made my way through, and it ebbs and flows. Another feature of it was that, you know, in cleaning out closets and things like that, as you start to do these things, I found that sort of box of stuff from high school and college and back home that at one point I had put it all away in there to move, and I never took it out. It just kind of moved with me through my 20s and 30s. And then finally, it's because it's been sitting there. So I found like old journals and these things. So I've been writing about that sporadically as I, you know, mostly kind of get rid of the stuff and like scan it or whatever. And so it's part of it's like little memoir pieces, but a lot of it is just like, here's the latest stack of Teen Titans or X-Men comics that I've read, or this whatever movie I have, because I have a fair amount of DVDs and Blu-rays that I have to get through, and then I have an enormous pile on my streaming queues, right? So,
mm-hmm. Oh yeah. So, yeah, no, you don't want to see my Just Watch queue. It's awful.
But it's been a lot of fun, and like I said, it sometimes I'm like really like on top of it and posting something regularly, and then they're like, and it half weeks will go by and I haven't posted anything. I'm like, oh, I should do something. So, but yeah, it can be a bit of a commitment, because I'm just like, what did I get myself into with this?
Well, and how successful would you say you have been? Because I can certainly relate. I am at a stage in life right now where my kids have hit adulthood. I've got mm-hmm. one that's heading out of the is out of the house. She's been married for almost a year now, but there's all this stuff still that I'm storing, you know, which is fine. Yeah. I get it. You know, you've got a small apartment. Okay, whatever. But gradually I'm trying to make space for the things that we need around here. And I'm as guilty as anyone, because I've got tons of stuff, but sometimes you just go, no, I can't part with that Happy Meal toy from 1993. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
The comics I think I've been the most successful at, because I've been able to, sell stacks of them and a couple of boxes of them. And then there were some that I had that I was able to just kind of give away, or even, I hate to say it, throw out, because they were in such poor condition, and even in poor condition, they weren't worth much. So if that goes into a recycling bin, it's not too bad. And my wife and I will cull the books from the bookshelves every, you know, year or so, to give away to the public library for their annual sale. So those terriers have been good. Movies, not so much. Yeah, I think I watch more on streaming than I do physically. And I've been working through my way through seasons of TV shows now. So, and then podcasts is funny, because I have like all these unlistened to episodes of podcasts on my, you know, on my player. And some of these podcasts are still going. So it's like, for every 20 that I'll listen to in a month or whatever,
yeah,
10 have gotten added. So it's the number always seems to fluctuate. So I'd give myself like a B minus or C plus as far as how this is going, but it's getting there.
It sounds like you're doing better than I probably would do. So you get points there.
My kid's not out of the house yet. They're going to be 16. So I've got a couple of years before we're deciding what to do with all of that.
I tell you, they do not want to get rid of anything. Mm-hmm. Every Polly Pocket, every Barbie, every Hot Wheels. You're going to have that for the next 20 years. Take my word for it.
When did helping your child clean their room turn into an episode of Hoarders? No, I need that because blah, blah, blah. I'm like, what?
I live it every time I podcast, because right now my place to podcast is here in the basement. And I am literally right now, as we speak, surrounded by boxes, and it looks like Hoarders. It totally mm-hmm. does. So we're pathetic. What can I say? All right, let's get on to this movie we have here today. This is called The Rescue. It's from 1988, directed by Ferdinand Fairfax. Not exactly Martin Scorsese, not a big name, but primarily a director of TV shows and miniseries, though I did recognize One other feature film that he directed, 1983 film Nate and Hayes, which I've never seen, but it's a bit of a swashbuckler starring Tommy Lee Jones. One of these days, it's probably on the Just Watch queue somewhere. But yeah. Probably a more notable name in the credits is the producer, Laura Ziskin. She was a producer on many big films over the years, probably most notable to comic book movie fans as being one of the producers of several of the Spider-Man films. And she also then, you know, has spent time at various studios, including a stint producing several films for Touchstone Pictures, which this is one of them. But she also produced some far more famous films from Touchstone, including What About Bob and one of the studio's biggest hits ever, Pretty Woman. Now, this film, it begins on a U.S. military base in South Korea. And it's interesting. We'll probably talk about this more. It actually looks like a nice little slice of American suburbia there on this base. Yeah. You know, they basically have the servicemen living there with their families. And, you know, I mean, it looks like, you know, any American suburb, basically. But the plot really kicks into action when a Navy submarine ends up disabled in international waters near North Korea. Now, most of the crew make it out safely, but the sub is sitting there at the bottom of the ocean in a bad spot where basically the North Koreans could easily swoop in there and steal all sorts of secrets. So a team of Navy SEALs is dispatched to dive down, plant explosives, and blow up the sub. Now, the men in this team are played by the likes of Edward Albert, Timothy Carhat, Charles Hayde. These are all guys who, if you don't know their names, you know their faces. You'll recognize them if you take a look at this. But long story short, they succeed in their mission, but end up falling right in the hands of the North Koreans, taken off to prison. Now, back at the base, the teenage kids of these SEALs are, of course, concerned, and they hear that there's a rescue operation in the works, but not wanting to upset the North Koreans and cause further friction, the Secretary of State abruptly calls things off, much to the chagrin of the Admiral of the base, played by James Cromwell. So the teens decide that they have no choice but to launch a rescue mission themselves. So among this group of teenagers, we have troublemaker JJ, who's played by Kevin Dillon. You have the straight-laced Sean, played by Ned Vaughn. His little brother Bobby, played by Ian Giotti. He basically sneaks his way onto the mission. And then we also have the techie character, Max, played by Mark Price. Skippy from Family Ties. He also happens to be the son of the Admiral. And then there is the lone girl of the bunch, Christine, played by Adrian Phillips. So this team of teenage heroes here, they first need to steal the top secret plans for this abandoned rescue mission so they can follow them themselves. So after a little plot to do that, then they get the gist of what they need to do. They head out into the seedy streets of Seoul, where they have to get their hands on a boat so they can head to North Korea. And then from there, they have to avoid the enemy military and meet up with a team of underground allies so that they can then go and rescue their dads. Now, I remember when this film came out. It wasn't in theaters very long, but I do remember when it was released. It was an end of summer release in August of 1988. And like I said, it was released by Touchstone Pictures. And that's a studio that I have always been fond of, always been intrigued with. Touchstone, of course, was one of the other Disney studios. You know, basically, Disney had a couple of different alternate names that they released movies that maybe were not, you know, best for the Disney name. Touchstone Pictures was the first. It started in 84 with the release of Splash. And then in the 90s, they also started Hollywood Pictures. So those two studios would release these type of films that maybe were not, you know, the ones they wanted that Disney name on. So I've always been intrigued by the history of that studio, and I'm always pleased to check things out from Touchstone. But this is what I had never gotten around to. So, but I'm going to let Tom start us out here. Give us a few of your thoughts on the rescue.
Yeah, I hadn't watched this in, gosh, it must be almost 35, 34, 33 years or something. Like, I remember I had got going in, I only remembered a couple of things because I remember renting it in like when it came out. So this probably was like late 88, early 89. Mm-hmm. And going in, I remember the whole plot. I remember the fact that the parents had been captured by the North Koreans. I remember the fact that Skippy Handelman was one of the people. And there's a scene toward the end involving Bobby and a Bruce Springsteen shirt that he is wearing. And that was the only moment I remembered from the entire movie going into watching this. And this had been on a list of things I had wanted to cover in some way, either my blog or whatever, for years. So when it's one of the ones I suggested. So I go into the movie and I'm like, and once I realized that it was really made for, and Leonard Maltin in his review of the movie had said this, it was really made for 12-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And I was in 89, I turned 12 in 1989. So, I was about just around Bobby's age when this movie came out, and I was playing with a lot of G.I. Joe toys. And this is very much this reeks of the sort of army games you would play with your friends, you know, and it was kind of tailor made for me, who had also been watching a lot of action movies at the time too. So going into it almost, you know, 35 years later or so, I was like, okay, I was trying to look at it from a critical eye, you know, as we do, but also trying to remember like who this is really for, because it's a PG action movie. So there's not a high body count. You know, there's certain things that have been in like your adult mind is going like, oh, they're torturing these guys, but they're not showing it. Mm-hmm. Clearly one of those the U.S. choppers, and when they get captured by the North Korean, clearly one of those choppers got shot down or something. I mean, like there's little gaps and things that you just kind of fill in. But right. I enjoyed this more than I thought I would, because it was just kind of fun to watch, even though like, you know, you laughed when you said they mount their own rescue mission, which is completely implausible. You know, and I think the other thing was I recognized a bunch of the actors, especially the kids, because, of course, Mark Price. But Bobby was the little brother in, I think, The Great Outdoors.
Yeah. Oh, and, I knew him.
Yeah.
But, oh, and yeah.
Ned Vaughn's been on a lot of television shows. He was on China Beach for a season or two. He kind of pops up. And then Christine Harnos, who played Adrian, was in Dazed and Confused. So I recognized her like immediately from there. So it's like, oh, and then of course the adult actors, like you said, it's like, I didn't know them by name, but I was like, yeah, this makes sense. Although I saw Edward Albert, I'm like, the guy from Green Acres? I was like, no, that's his son.
Yeah, we totally, a few years back, we did an episode on a movie called Butterflies Are Free, which this Albert is in as well as one of his first films. And yeah, we had to, both myself and my guests, spend a lot of time being like, yeah, it's we were confused because Eddie Albert is the old guy, you know? So.
Yeah. A couple of things that were, I thought, they played really well where they have this huge set piece at the end with the actual rescue, without getting too much into spoiler territory here. Some of the things the kids do to pull it off when they're there, actually do seem kind of plausible. They come up with an idea involving fireworks and a diversion and stuff. I'm like, yeah, I could see how you would kind of be able to pull that off, even though like you're invading like the compound they have to get into looks like a fortress from like a Kurosawa film.
Right.
It's just, you know, they go through the sewers. I'm like, okay, so you found the plan, and Skippy's dad, the admiral, or they have the access to it. But yeah, so, but like, you know, kind of once you kind of throw out like realism, you're just like, oh, this is kind of a fun. It is kind of a fun movie. It's not a particularly good movie, I'll be honest with you, but
yeah.
But it was for the hour and a half, and it's a pretty tight hour and a half. The other thing I kept thinking of was how much trouble these kids are going to be in after this. And like, did these kids just start World War III?
Yes. Yes, there are all kinds of questions about the aftermath of this movie. And you know, like you said, kind of the holes that are in it, because there are a lot of holes. I think you're absolutely right in your assessment where there are places where, as you're watching this, especially as an adult, you fill in the gaps because there are things that you think should be there but aren't, because like you said, it's a PG action film. It's mm-hmm. geared for 12-year-olds. So like you mentioned how we fill in the gap as an adult and go, oh, well, the dads that are on this SEAL team, they're captured, they're being tortured, they're in bad shape here. We don't really see that, except for maybe, I think there's like a fleeting glimpse of some mistreatment when they meet up with that team of you know, allies, and, yeah, and they kind of show them some video or something like that. But there's no real kind of massive, oh, how am I trying to say it? You don't get overly concerned, I guess, certainly watching it as a young person, because you don't understand what's going on. You don't get a lot of glimpses as to what conditions the dads are dealing with, what, you know, what, how they're being maltreated or whatever. It's just, oh yeah, we're a bunch of spunky kids and we're on this adventure, you know?
So. Yeah. Yeah. It's not the Deer Hunter.
No.
In that regard. Well, and this was like, there were a lot of these like kids going on an adventure movies through the '80s. This was, a lot of them were science fiction, or they were real adventure stuff like the Goonies, right?
Right.
This is
explorers.
This is tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, explorers and things. Even E.T. had that, you know, the kids on the adventure aspect to it. This is tough because it's a military action flick. And the only other movie I can think of that I covered on my show a couple of years ago that was similar in nature was a movie called Ruskies from about a year before this. It has a it's this Russian submarine guy washes up on like Key West or whatever, and these kids take him in, and there's this whole kind of Cold War tension about it. Joaquin Phoenix is in it, like,
yeah,
really still called Leaf at the time.
I used to always get this mixed up with Ruskies, to be honest, yeah, because one word titles that start with R, I guess.
Yeah, and I think until I had watched Ruskies a couple of years ago from my show, and I had thought that Joaquin Phoenix was actually Bobby in this movie. So it was, and they're very close to each other. But yeah, it's hard.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's hard to do what essentially is like Commando in PG, right? Because, like, yeah, you know, Commando has, you know, the last half hour of Commando is just ridiculous. But it is a very R-rated, you know, Schwarzenegger's, you know, being, you know, a one-man army. But it's a similar premise. Like, he has to go get somebody out of this compound or whatever. So they kind of take that and distill it to this PG thing. And there's literally like one death in the entire movie where it's like a hand-to-hand combat part and somebody does break somebody's neck. Otherwise, every death is either implied or it's kind of – there's kind of a couple of shooting deaths, but it's very like quick moment off-screen sort of, you know, that sort of thing. So they, you know, that's why I was like, you know, overall I can see why this did not fare very well, because it's hard to do this movie and have audiences be like really attached to it in the way that, like, in the era of the Rambo and of the Schwarzenegger and things like that.
Well, that final, you know, the ultimate rescue of the movie, I mean, I guess you could say in some ways it's violent because it does have its fair share of gunfire and explosions and all that. But there's also this playfulness about it, because what really kicks it all off is that thing that you were talking about earlier, the fireworks, which I agree. I mean, it's contrived, you know, that they're even there in the first place. You know, oh yeah, there's fireworks there because it's the workers' celebration, whatever. But they use it to great effect, I think, you know, where they rig up this thing, and at the right moment they tilt all the fireworks down towards the soldiers, and then they're shooting at them and they're blowing up and all that. And it's like, well, what kid hasn't imagined doing that type of thing? You know, it's like what you said, it's playing with your G.I. Joe dolls and blowing them up in the backyard.
And then the rescue itself, like, there's in the very least, because you could tell they put all they could into those, I think it's the last 20-25 minutes of the movie, and that's where I think they were hoping that would be the big, like, people are going to want to see this. So it's not just that they get out of the fortress, they have to get back to South Korea, and they're in this rickety plane, and there's tension over whether or not they're going to make it because they're being shot at by anti-aircraft and they're losing fuel. And so they, you know, they're, and the, you know, the at that point, the dads are flying it so that, you know, the, you know, so it's not, you know, and one of the dads at one point gets shot. So they try to put in little bits and pieces of like, are they going to get out of this and such. The other thing that I noticed too is, and I was thinking about the movie as I finished it up yesterday, and I've been thinking about it here and there, is you have a very formulaic type of group of kids. Like when you were describing them at the beginning, you have the rebel kid, the straight-laced kid, you have the girl, and you have the brother, and you have the geek. And it's very much like there are so many teams, and unfortunately the characters tend to be very one-dimensional, to the point where like Kevin Dillon or JJ says that we don't need a girl here.
Yeah.
And Christine Harnos's character is like a black belt, you know, but unfortunately she only gets like action when she actually kicks one of the guys when they're trying to steal the boat, and like with like a some sort of like high Daniel LaRusso high karate kick or something.
Right.
But
yeah.
She's like, oh, but then from that point on, she's kind of like protecting Bobby from everything. And Kevin Dillon really gets much of the spotlight as far as the action, because when we see him in the beginning of the movie, him and his father aren't getting along. His father's just kind of this Marine, like, you know, or you know, he's a Navy SEAL, but he's very hard headed. You know, like I'm trying to think of.
He has an idea of how his kid is supposed to be. As a military man, he wants his son to reflect a certain, you know, a certain thing,
yeah,
you know, about him as a father. And Kevin Dillon is not that kind of kid. You know, so.
Yeah. Kevin Dillon kind of made a career through his teens in the late 80s of playing that type of character, that screw up. Because I believe he played a very similar character in the remake of The Blob around this time. And so he was at least recognizable in that type of role. And Ned Vaughn always kind of looked like the kind of all-American kid type. He would go on to play a soldier in Vietnam on China Beach in this sort of same kind of regard, where he was like the nice guy soldier and stuff. And you know, and then Mark Price is playing a kind of a Skippy yeah. Handelman type.
Yeah.
So yeah, it in that regard, they did the best they could with that material, because the characters are not written very three-dimensionally.
Oh no, the characters are all very much just, yeah, like you say, this is the rebel kid, this is the straight-laced kid, etc. As a matter of fact, I would even go as far as to say all of these actors, and I don't want this to sound terrible, because I do enjoy what most of them are bringing here, but I think it's very clear that they're all kind of like that. Like the director might have said, I would like this actor. And the producer said, well, you can't afford this actor. I can give you this, you know, because I mean, look at them. I mean, first of all, I mean, I'm sure this sounds awful, but this is half of Kevin Dillon's career. I want Matt Dillon for this. You can't afford Matt Dillon. I can get you Kevin Dillon. Okay. Can we get Eric Stoltz for this kid? I can't get you Eric Stoltz, but I can get you this kid who looks just like him. How about we get John Cryer for Max? I can't get you John Cryer, but I can get you Skippy from Family Ties. Okay. You know, you mentioned that Bobby, that you had him and Joaquin Phoenix mixed up from Ruskies. I mean, he's totally doing, you know, Leaf Phoenix. He was known as Leaf at the time, you know, but I'm watching this. I'm going, yeah, it's Leaf Phoenix in Space Camp there.
Space Camp, yes.
You know, and I wasn't quite sure how to place, you know, the lone girl of this. I mean, she could be any, you know, number of more known actresses, you know, maybe a Phoebe Cates, maybe a Leah Thompson.
Leah Thompson was the first thing that you mentioned. Yeah. Space Camp, and I thought of Leah Thompson's character in Space Camp.
But yeah, I mean, they're all very much, you know, I think they do a decent enough job, but, you know, they're very much fitting into those other types of roles that these other bigger name actors and actresses, you know, were known for. I think, you know, I'm going to keep calling him Skippy through the whole thing.
Yeah,
you know,
too.
Mark Price is his name, but he's always going to be Skippy to me. But I mean, what he's doing here just shouts John Cryer. It is, I mean, you know, it's a slightly awkward sort of geeky, but he dresses with this odd style to him. You know, it's totally the type of parts that John Cryer used to play, except for maybe the techno part of things, which, as kind of a geeky kid myself, I mean, I enjoyed that. Yeah. I liked his kind of homemade techie type of thing going, you know, he's making these little devices that, you know, he puts in the boardroom so he can listen in on his dad, the admiral's big meetings and such. You know, he's got these little things that he builds, but he still has to stick them under the table with bubble gum. You know, that's fun.
Yeah. He's very a little bit of Matthew Broderick in War Games, you know, with the techie stuff. And I thought I liked the fact that those devices were so homemade that they weren't like crystal clear functioning, so that, again, it was a little bit of plausibility. And then when they all have walkie talkies and earpieces when they're during the raid and things like that. At least we know like how they got there in some regard. And then he's clearly the comic relief as well with the in the John Cryer vein, because when they have to sneak off the base to go into Seoul, they swipe Ned Vaughn's character, the mom's car. And it's a really gorgeous car. I don't know what it's a gorgeous classic car. And but they can't, because they're underage, they can't go off base after 8 o'clock or something. There's like a sign posted at the gate. And so they all hide in the car, and Skippy is dressed as the mother. It's Skippy in drag. And it's funny because it totally works. He does the oh hi, blah, blah, you know, this sort of almost Screech Powers sort of way of doing it. And then through the whole sequence, because Kevin Dillon knows basically a couple of like Korean mobsters or just ne'er-do-wells who he has essentially tried to pay off for some transport. And then he comes out, he's like, they ripped us off, and they end up stealing a boat. And there's a whole thing where they drive the car through the restaurant they're in or whatnot. So this is kind of fight, but for half the time Mark Price is in drag, and it's just he's still doing he's got the makeup on, he's got the wig on and the dress on, but he's talking to himself, and it's like he at least could do he had the comedic timing to do it. And and like Kevin Dillon kind of over remotes, but I mean, to his credit, he is we couldn't get Matt Dillon, so we got Kevin Dillon. But he's not like Frank Stallone, so he's a little better quality of an actor. And he held his own pretty well, especially when he had to, because being the angry kid, and then when he does finally see his father and the sort of, he gets the help from his father and stuff, there's some pretty good nonverbal acting going on in that scene.
Yeah. I want to jump back to the whole, Skippy and drag thing, which, it's weird. You sit there and watch it and you're going, dude, I would have had the wig off 10 seconds after clearing the gate, but he keeps it on through that whole sequence. And I like that sequence. I think that it's a fun little, action scene there where, he sends the car off sailing. It crashes through the restaurant, goes into the water. They steal the boat and all that stuff. I think that's a lot of fun. I agree with you on Kevin Dillon. He's got some moments that work in this. At the same time, he does overdo it at times. I think that he actually improves as the movie goes on. The early scenes, especially the first scene with him and the father, Kevin Dillon is really swinging for the fences in that, with the whole, you don't understand me type of thing.
Yeah.
I'm glad that it doesn't keep that same level of overdoing it as the movie goes on. He's got some decent enough moments. And I agree, that scene where he's essentially reunited with the father, the actual rescue, and it does have to do with that fight you mentioned earlier and the one moment of really, more severe violence of that. Yeah, the way that they look at each other. I love the look of just shock on the dad's face when he realizes, what, my no good kid came and rescued me here?
Well, the fact that the men, the fathers they're rescuing are SEALs, so they are smart enough to kind of know that there's a mission when they do get rescued, and they do kind of take over once they're out of their cells. And the kids are helping, but you can see that the dads are clearly in charge. And I thought that was I thought that was played very well, because there are some pretty good action scenes, and again, some decent moments of tension when they're trying to finally get to safety. It drags out a little bit as we get closer and closer to the end. It's like, what, one more thing that can go wrong? It's like, we all know they're going to be fine. And you have Bobby with the one thing with it's the Springsteen shirt rip. again, the one moment I remember from the entire movie.
Well, I don't blame you. That was my favorite moment of the whole film. I laughed out loud, and I don't know if it was because I thought it was just a wonderful idea or if I thought it was just so silly that I couldn't resist. I don't know, but it was the biggest reaction for me out of the movie, that because basically they're in danger of being shot down by their own planes because they're, and so they have to somehow signal to the friendlies that we're Americans, we're okay. So he goes out the top hatch of the plane, bursts open his shirt. It's a Bruce Springsteen Born in the USA shirt, and that's enough for them to know.
I think the pilot says, like, you're not going to believe this.
It was great. Yeah. I loved that moment. Jumping back a little bit to the escape. I mean, you talked about the it's just kind of one thing on top of another. What else is going to go wrong type of thing. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed that for the most part. I think you're right. It maybe goes on a little too long, but there are certainly fun elements. And again, I think in these sequences, like we can throughout this film, I think it points to other movies that are more iconic. Mm-hmm. One of the things when they are escaping is that they make their way through the sewers and whatnot, and then there's a water tube, a pipe or something, and they're going to slide down the pipe. Wherever it goes, they don't know where it goes to get out. And it's like, oh, well, here we go. This is the Goonies.
Yes.
This is, this is the water slide from the Goonies. Though I love that there's the moment where, they cut and show the tube from the outside, and then we see it just shoot down almost straight down this cliff. And we hear the voices on the inside yelling, what?
Exactly.
And, so yeah, that I thought was a fun moment. Silly but fun.
Yeah, no, I thought of the Goonies, and when the one person cursed, I believe that's the line that Corey Feldman has at that very moment too, in
right.
that movie.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Yeah, it was a callback to that. And it does make the film derivative and formulaic, right? Because it's they're pulling from what they knew was going to be a might have been a good beat and stuff like that. But yeah, it made it at least entertaining for, what we were watching. I mean, this would have been one of those movies that I probably would have caught bits and pieces of, because it would have gotten might have gotten played in syndication too. You know, like one of those Saturday afternoon things that was on like at 2 or so, because they could just throw it on for 2 hours and you end up catching like maybe the last 20 minutes or something. And stuff like that. And I could totally see this being one of those types of movies, because it was easy to air. You really didn't have to edit much
except
for a couple of lines and that. So,
it's perfect for, a 2 hour slot on a Saturday afternoon. I mean, it's already only an hour and a half long.
Mm-hmm.
You've got plenty of time for commercials there. You don't have to make many other edits. Yeah, no. And it's fine for the kiddies. I mean, I suppose it probably plays into some things that, certainly there were folks that would have taken issue with back in the 80s. What do you think about violence in kids' mm-hmm. movies or things like that? Because, I mean, ultimately it's a military focused story,
yeah.
There's a lot of shooting and things blowing up and things like that. And it's about those evil commies and all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like I said, but for me, who was playing with his G.I. Joes, it was like totally meant for me, but yeah, I had only seen it the one time and remember enjoying it and then kind of moving on, because my parents let me watch Schwarzenegger movies at 10 and 11 years old. I will never know to this day, but I'm going to go watch Predator now.
Well, I mean, there is something to be said, I guess, for the pitch that is basically, oh yeah, well, it's Commando or it's Rambo, but with teenagers. And I mean, you can certainly look to other movies that were more successful that were similar. I mean, you mentioned Ruskies, which wasn't a big hit either, yeah. But like, as I was watching this, I was going, oh, well, clearly they're pulling a little bit of influence from Red Dawn or Iron
yes.
Eagle. You know what I mean? I think Iron Eagle big time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think you summed it up very well earlier when you said it's not a terribly good movie. There's a lot of problems with it. There's a lot of holes in the story. There's a lot of things that I wish had been in this. I would have liked more drama with the fathers in prison. I would have liked an actual visible villain of this. Instead, it's just kind of the bad guy army. I would have liked an evil general or something like that. Even when it comes to the teen genre, that there's things that are missing. I was surprised there wasn't like a romance between the lone female and the Eric Stoltz lookalike.
You could tell that, I don't know if it would have been an earlier draft of the script or something, but you could tell that it was almost that she was, that her and JJ might have gotten together in that sort of Molly Ringwald goes for Judd Nelson sort of way.
Right.
Because it was kind of leaning toward that, but nothing ever actually comes of it because they don't really give her much to do once they get into North Korea.
Yeah. Well, and there's a moment at the very end when everybody's reunited and they're back on the base and everyone's celebrating. You know, it's like the shots at the end of the Goonies when they're all there on the beach, you know, type of thing. Either she's got her arm around Kevin Dillon or he's got his arm around her. And you're like, okay, was there a romance subplot that was, you know, left on the cutting room floor here? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I guess when it comes to the, you know, the lower tiers of the teen films of the 80s, you know, how does The Rescue fare?
For what it's worth, it was definitely if it's not a 2 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, you come across it movie, it's a everything else was out at the video store and this was what was left to rent movie. It was entertaining enough. So I didn't feel like my time was wasted, but it's definitely kind of like a B-level, C-level movie. It's not anything that anybody's going to at the most people are going to like, oh, I kind of remember that movie, but nobody's going to – I don't know if anybody's going to be like a really, really huge fan or if this is going to get like any cult following or something like some other movies of this type have people have fond memories of.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you totally on that. I mean, like I said, not a terribly good movie, but I think it is entertaining. I mean, at my age, I admit there are several nights where I sit down with a movie and I start to drift sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't drift with The Rescue. I couldn't sit here and tell you that it was phenomenal, an amazing movie, had to be riveted from moment to moment, a great cinematic achievement. No, it's none of those things. But was I entertained? Was I engaged by it? Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes, definitely.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break here. We'll hear from another LAM Podcasting Network show, and then we'll be back with our movie recommendations here on the Forgotten Filmcast.
You'll save money and time. You'll get the best of merchandise and service when you patronize these good neighbors. Shop with them regularly for friendly service and money-saving values.
In a world where podcasts already seem to address every imaginable subject, one man broke new ground with a seemingly random obsession about exploding helicopters in movies. He was a podcaster on the edge, a maverick broadcaster who played by his own rules. Now, he has a last chance to talk about the strange way helicopters explode in film. Exploding Helicopter, available on iTunes and Podomatic now. Think you know about chopper fireballs? Think again.
Hi, everybody. This is Todd. Just a quick reminder that you can now help support the Forgotten Filmcast through Patreon. For just a few little old dollars a month, you can support this show and also earn access to some bonus content. So visit patreon.com/forgottenfilmcast to learn more.
Hi, folks. I'm Rico.
Oh, Nacho.
He's Peppy.
Si.
You can find us at the concession stand in the lobby.
Along with all sorts of other tasty goodies.
See,
Rico's Nachos, a refreshingly new and different snack discovery. Chock full of high-quality ingredients, crisp, fresh tortilla chips, covered with creamy aged cheddar cheese, topped off with zesty jalapeno pepper rings. Rico's Nachos, out of sight.
Remember, folks, we're the new star at the snack bar. Rico's Nachos, a new taste treat you can't beat.
See?
Rico's Nachos, on sale at the snack bar now.
Okay, welcome back. It's time for our movie recommendations. This is the part of the show where each of us gets to talk about another movie that we've enjoyed. It could be anything. It could be a forgotten film. It could be an old classic, something that's new in theaters or on streaming. Absolutely anything is possible. So, Tom, what is your recommendation?
I'm actually going with a movie you've already mentioned in our discussion of this one, which is Iron Eagle from 1986. This is a very similar plot. Jason Gedrick's father gets shot down in the Middle East. I think it's over like some fictional Middle Eastern country, but it's supposed to be basically Libya. And, you know, are they going to mount a rescue mission? They're not. And Jason Gedrick is like, he's on the verge of, he got rejected from the Air Force Academy. So he and Louis Gossett Jr., who plays Chappie, this Vietnam vet who's, you know, kind of his mentor, steal planes and fly in and rescue dad. And it was one of those movies that I remember we rented repeatedly. And it gets compared to Top Gun a lot because they came out around the same time. But and Top Gun is a much better movie. But this is one of those ones where, like, you know, again, it was this sort of teenage fantasy Red Dawn type of thing. And so if you're interested in this and you want to see something else like this, Iron Eagle is a pretty solid movie from what I remember.
Yeah, I almost went with this as my recommendation too, because as I said before, certainly as I was watching The Rescue, I thought, oh yeah, there's echoes of Iron Eagle here. Iron Eagle's way better. Fun. It's got, I think, a great dynamic, because I mean, we've got Jason Gedrick, but we've also got a collection of other characters around him, you know, other young, young up and coming pilots and whatnot. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, where I think, The Rescue suffers a little bit in not having well-defined characters, I think Iron Eagle does a much better job in that. And the highlight though, of course, is the dynamic between Jason Gedrick and Louis Gossett Jr. I mean, yes. Of course, Louis Gossett Jr. is one of those guys who just, you know, steals things left and right, whatever he's in. He tends to steal the movie. And, I want to compare it. It's very different, but I want to compare it to the dynamic between Ralph Macchio and Pat Morita and The Karate Kid to some degree. It's got a similar type of vibe, in terms of the older, wiser guy and the young, hothead type of a thing. Like I say, there's certainly different aspects to it, but I think the movie is going for that as well. Kind of that older mentor, young student type of a relationship. So that's something I've enjoyed about the movie. I only just recently finally saw Iron Eagle 2. I had never seen it before.
I saw that in the theater. I don't remember it very well.
Well, it's such a disappointment. I guess spoiler for Iron Eagle 2, but this is the first 10 minutes of the movie. But I could not believe, again, after, you know, that you've got a strong dynamic between these two characters in the first film. They kill off Jason Gedrick in the first 10 minutes of Iron Eagle 2.
I remember that.
Like, what?
Yeah. Oh, Iron Eagle, by the way, has a really good soundtrack. So that also has something going for it there.
It's Johnny Lawrence's favorite movie. Cobra Kai, he says so. Anyway. All right. Well, the movie that I'm going to recommend, oddly enough, is one that Tom mentioned earlier in the podcast. So I guess we're even when it comes to that. But, you know, if we're talking about a movie that stars Kevin Dillon with The Rescue here, I mean, I make no bones about it. Kevin Dillon is an actor that I'm not terribly fond of. I could tolerate it to a degree. But if we're going to look at the one bright shining moment from his filmography, it has to be the other movie he made in 1988. And that, of course, is the remake of The Blob, which, I'll call Kevin Dillon's greatest cinematic achievement there. I don't need to tell you what The Blob is about. You all know what The Blob is about. In my opinion, this is the definitive version of The Blob. I think the 1958 original is severely overrated, especially in recent years here. When I was young, it was kind of talked about all the time as being not a good movie. And here in recent years, people are all like, oh, The Blob is wonderful. And it's really so deep, and it's about the Red Scare, and it's all this blah, blah, blah. Criterion put it out, so it's wonderful. No, I'm sorry. The original Blob is a cheesy monster movie that is okay at best. It's entertaining, but it's not a great film. The 88 remake is spectacular. It is wonderful. I think that it improves on the original idea significantly. You know, this time we're not dealing with just some random alien glob that landed in a field. You know, it's like a bioweapon gone wrong in this version. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely bonkers, the things that happen in this. I mean, The Blob pulls a guy down the kitchen sink in this movie.
That's the one kill in that movie I remember vividly, because the way they do The Blob, it's like a clear, viscous liquid instead of this sort of rolling thing that looks like pudding. Yeah. So I remember that clearly. And I also remember the scene where I think Kevin Dillon's character is picking up his girlfriend from a date, and the dad is the pharmacist who sold them the condoms at the drugstore. Because I just remember the dad looking up from his newspaper and going, ribbed.
Yeah. I mean, it's nuts. Yeah. It's a nuts movie. The gore effects are crazy fun in this. Yeah. And, you know, I would say that the cast, they strike the right tone. I mean, you've got Kevin Dillon, you've got Shawnee Smith, folks like that, and they just strike the right tone for this movie. In my book, the 88 version of The Blob is one of the best remakes we've ever had. So
yeah, I'll second that. I remember that. And Shawnee Smith coming right off of Summer School too. So I remember her from that, but I saw that. I think I watched it 4 or 5 times when I was right around the time it came out on video. So I have a lot of fond memories of that. So that's a good choice.
All right. Well, Tom, I want to thank you for being on the show. Before I let you go here, please remind everybody of where they can find you and all the different projects you've got going on.
Yeah. Pop Culture Affidavit. You can find it popcultureaffidavit.com. I'm on Twitter as PopAff, P-O-P-A-F-F, and Instagram as Pop Culture Affidavit. And if you want to follow my uncollecting project, that is theuncollecting.com.
Awesome. Thanks again for being on the show. And I'll be back to close things here in just a moment here on the Forgotten Filmcast. Well, folks, that's going to do it for this episode of the Forgotten Filmcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to read more reviews of Forgotten Films, you can find them over at the Forgotten Films blog. That's at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Forgotten Films. That's films with a Z. And you can like Forgotten Films on Facebook. I'd love to hear your questions, comments, and feedback about the show, so feel free to email me at forgottenfilmcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/forgottenfilmcast, where you can learn more about how you can help support this show. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, go watch some old movies.
Explosives. I forgot explosives. I'll pick some up on the way home from school.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.